Hey there, my name is Jared Holt, and welcome back to Posting Through It. It's a bi-weekly podcast released every other Monday that examines our cultural and political decay as it relates to the internet. Each week, I bring on a guest who's doing groundbreaking work on this front, and we talk for about half an hour and unpack the latest badness, whatever it is, that plagues our human condition online. You can find the episode archive on postingthroughit.com. And while you're there, consider subscribing for $5 a month to keep this thing going. There's also a newsletter you can read. Sign up for that too. Same website. It goes out in between episodes. As I was watching midterm elections unfold last month, and I'm still thinking about them, maybe it's a sign of being mildly traumatized by all the stress I was feeling, I kept seeing young conservatives at the forefront of Republican messaging. And I just kept thinking about it. And then last week, Kanye West, he went on InfoWars, was spreading Jew hate on there. And who's beside him? None other than the young white nationalist, Nick Fuentes, who keeps a cadre of young guys, around him. Turning Point USA president and founder Charlie Kirk is just swimming in cash these days, calling shots across the Republican landscape. The conferences are crazy. Trap music, fog cannons, huge stages. To do what? Tell kids that capitalism is based and epic? Oh yeah, and some of the folks that spread Pizzagate are involved with Turning Point now. Anyway, I just kept wondering, how the hell did we get here? Who decided these were the people to try to influence the upcoming generation of conservatives who will gradually take places in positions where they have access to the levers of power? I thought about it and thought about it. And then I reached out to the award-winning journalist Kyle Spencer, who wrote a book exactly on this. You may have seen Kyle on TV or read her work in New York Magazine, Washington Post, The Atlantic, Politico, and so on. She published a book this year called Raising Them Right, The Untold Story of America's Ultra-Conservative Youth Movement. And that's available wherever books are sold. I'll put a link to it down in the description of this episode. Kyle, how's it going?
Hey, I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you too. So to start out, in the title of your book, you refer to America's ultra-conservative youth movement. And before we dive in, I want to ask you to explain exactly what you're talking about when we're talking about the ultra-conservative youth movement, at least how it exists today. Where are the edges? Who are we talking about? And to what point is this like coordinated? And to what point is this sort of naturally occurring?
So the book looks at or defines all the ultra-conservative youth movement as groups that are intricately engaged in the conservative ecosystem. And as we understand it now, the conservative ecosystem in the Republican Party is a far-right party and is an ultra-conservative party. I make a distinction, and I'm really glad that you asked this question because it's an important distinction between folks like the Proud Boys, or even a Nick Fuentes character, Oath Keepers, groups that are not so tightly connected to the conservative movement as a whole and didn't necessarily get co-opted in the same way. So groups like Turning Point USA, Young Americans for Liberty, Young Americans for Freedom, people like Charlie Kirk, people like Candace Owens, folks like Ben Shapiro. These are people that have been co-opted into the movement. I know Ben Shapiro can kind of be a little bit, his views can sometimes change on certain topics. Mm-hmm. But the Leadership Institute, which is an organization that educates these young people, this is all part of the sort of ultra-conservative youth movement that I write about. And the reason the distinction is important is because I make an argument in my book that while the Oath Keepers and some of these other radical groups, white supremacist groups, often get a lot more press, the groups I'm writing about, I argue, are more dangerous because they're actually selling a lot of the very same radical and alarming ideas, but selling them kind of with a smile, selling them as more mainstream, even though they're not.
I would completely agree with that. As a professional extremism researcher, this shit is so close to the mainstream if it isn't there already, right? So it definitely agree with you there. So conservatives have been doing outreach to young people as long as I can remember. I'm really not that old. I'm 28. So was there a point in time as you're, you know, researching this book where like a big investment really started to happen in cultivating conservative youth? And if so, what did those early efforts look like? I mean, today, it's almost cartoonish, really. It's hard to believe that this has gotten so big. You know, it's turned into owning the libs, panic on college campuses, and that sort of thing. Where did we come from on here?
Yeah, and I think the idea that it's cartoonish and that it's gotten so big really is an important point, because as you know, groups like Turning Point USA raise tens of millions of dollars a year. And I think in the last couple of years, Turning Point USA is raising $50 million plus dollars annually, which is an insane amount of money and doesn't even pale in comparison to the amounts of money that young left-wing groups or progressive groups make. But the movement here started in the 1960s after the Barry Goldwater loss. These groups were so devastated, these young activists, young right-wing activists in the 1960s were so devastated that Goldwater had lost to Lyndon Johnson that they moved to Washington to start a new conservative movement, to take a lot of the then radical ideas that Barry Goldwater held and to bring them into the mainstream. And they started this young movement, which we see with folks like Paul Weyrich or Morton Blackwell, who started the Leadership Institute. And Viguerie is another character that some people who follow this know. Anyway, they move along and they eventually get this president, Ronald Reagan, who we all know, who they end up sort of helping to popularize. He gets in office. You see, the 80s is kind of a heyday for young Republicans. Then we move along and eventually we get an Obama president, right? Which for these folks is an absolute devastation. And this completely enrages them and motivates them. And that's, I argue, when you start to see this renewal of this conservative movement and taking the funding and the organizing and the media work to a new level and to the extreme level we're seeing now. And of course, the Obama presidency and the backlash against Obama and the rise of social media come at the same time. And that's part of why we see these groups scaling and raising money and messaging so well. They've really taken advantage of this new landscape.
So groups like the Leadership Institute, which gave us names like Jim Jordan, Tucker Carlson, I've been there several times to report on things, and you can just walk down the hallway, and it's like every major Republican politician you can think of, right? You know, the ones especially that are really good at messaging. They also do training on like grassroots organizing, campaigning. It's essentially like a little education center. They even have campus reform there to try to teach their people how to write journalism style stories. That's certainly still around, but I'm curious if you think the rise of groups like Turning Point USA, Young Americans for Liberty, in the book you follow Charlie Kirk, Candace Owens, and Cliff Maloney, do you think that these are kind of, you know, that an organization like Turning Point USA, which I think we're going to talk about a lot because it has so much money and power at this point in time, do you think that's like the equivalent of the Leadership Institute? Was the Leadership Institute ever taking in like that kind of money?
So no, it wasn't. And the Leadership Institute is kind of like an umbrella organization that, as you noted, teaches the members of these different groups. And as you noted, anybody that we know nowadays who's a power broker in the Republican Party went through the Leadership Institute. That's how influential it is. But Turning Point USA has, because of its understanding of how celebridom works and how to message on social media, has just blown every one of these other groups out of the water. And Charlie Kirk, as we know, figures can be very influential in movements, obviously, right? And Charlie Kirk is an incredibly charismatic, driven, beyond compare guy who has figured out that what he needs to do is to message online with social media and has been absolutely unbelievable at raising money from donors who are so scared of the left and also feeling so unable to figure out how to send their messages across the web. And Charlie Kirk kind of arrives and says, I can figure this out. I'll do this for you. I'm your guy. And they have just given him so much money.
So Candace Owens, Charlie Kirk, Cliff Maloney, you mentioned that, you know, sort of towards the end of the Obama presidency is really when these kind of figures, or I guess you could even call it like this sort of modern wave of the youth conservative movement, the ultra-conservative youth movement, really kind of rose up into prominence, started getting money thrown on it. resources allocated to it. You mentioned that these groups were able to pitch to donors that they understood the internet. They understood that, you know, internet celebrities were a big asset. And something else that they did was they went sort of headfirst into college campuses, which that kind of panic really, I think, probably started, I think it would be fair to say, like in the 90s in a major way. But it seemed like during the Obama presidency, it just like went crazy. And that content was performing like crazy online. I guess my question is, how important is the internet in these kind of movements?
Yeah, so what we've understood increasingly, and there's sort of two answers to that. We've understood increasingly, and we all know this now, right? There's been so many studies showing, indicating this, and so many people going through the analytics and looking at this, that hate messaging goes viral, has a sort of virality possibility at a much higher rate than sort of other types of messaging. So hate movements move fast online. And if they are strategic, they move even faster. And if they're savvily done, they move even faster. And if you have a celebrity behind them, they move even faster. And so that's one thing. So these guys kind of have to their advantage that they're messaging hate, fear, anger, rage, resentment, right? So that works well when you're trying to message online, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But the other thing, and the point I try to make in the book, is that it is very, very expensive to people don't realize how expensive it is to message online. And a lot of folks think that this is organic, that this type of thing happens without a lot of attention. And that's not true. When I spent time at Turning Point USA's headquarters, I saw the millions and millions of dollars that was going into their social media efforts.
Millions to test.
I mean, every single thing that you see online that they push out has been tested. They tested. They literally do testing. Like, if I want to stand here on this stage and I want to, you know, be on this campus and I want to tell people that the libs are bad, should I have a woman, a man, a girl, a blonde, a brunette, glasses, no glasses, high red lettering, blue lettering? They test it all.
This and is like so a science.
It's like a science, and they and so what I really tell progressive donors is that if they want to do good messaging on their side, they ought to expect to pony up a lot of money because it's not cheap. And while hate is one reason the stuff goes viral, another reason is because these folks work very, very hard at figuring out what works. And that's been what's Charlie Turning Point USA shop has really perfected that.
I had not heard before that it went that deep. I knew that they invested heavy in social media, but I'm just sitting with this for a second. I had no idea. That's really almost a little bit unsettling. Anyway, so finding these people that, you know, are going to perform well for them or help them spread their message across different platforms, something that Turning Point USA has done along this sort of, you know, strategy of trying to utilize celebrity is find different conservative influencers who are making TikToks about how awesome capitalism is or whatever the hell, and sort of bringing them into this network and really courting them. This is something that I feel like I really saw, you know, the effect of during midterms, because on election day, you know, something would happen at a voting center in Arizona, and then all of a sudden it's just everywhere. They also do the thing that I really hate when people do on Twitter, which is they read some other news story and then they just summarize it in a sentence and throw breaking in front of it. So they're like cosplaying as reporters too, which is very annoying to me. Can you tell me more about sort of courting in this like network of influencers? Because I think a lot of people that know about Turning Point USA, they think about, you know, Charlie Kirk or Candace Owens, who I'd like to talk about in a second. But there's this whole almost like sub ecosystem that they're also fostering that I think, you know, would be important to talk about.
Yeah. So in terms of ambassadors, they've created this huge ambassador movement, I think, is which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That also, and so important to first understand, that also costs a lot of money, and they do a lot of testing on those people as well. So before they decide that they're going to have someone be an ambassador and or start a, you know, they've got the Turning Point now operates basically like a media company. And so if they decide that they want to start a show with somebody, they're going to test that person too and make sure that that person is popular with viewers and people like them, and that their messaging can get, you know, that they can use this person to spread their messaging. So that's the first thing, is they really test the stuff they test actual people. What they generally do is they try to find people who have audiences already. So they might decide that they want to get, you know, white jocks, or they want to get young, young women who are religious. And they find people who can then speak, who already speak to those audiences. And then they kind of cross promote. They have those people selling their messaging, selling Turning Point USA, selling themselves. And so everyone kind of wins, except, you know, the American, except the country as a whole. they do a lot of that, and they're constantly finding new people. And one of the things that you'll see is that Charlie Kirk go on stages, sometimes he goes alone, but a lot of times he goes with other people. So that during the Trump presidency, he co-branded himself with Donald Trump to some extent, but to Don Jr. He spent a lot of time going around town with Don Jr., who at that time had grown quite a following himself. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of cross-promoting. There's an understanding that two people on a stage might be more dynamic than one. Candace Owens is somebody that came to Charlie's attention when he was getting a lot of, and his group was getting a lot of accusations that there was racism in his quarters. And so suddenly he was seen around town a lot with her. So he's very strategic about who he chooses to use to send the messages that he, sends out.
Yeah, let's talk about Candace Owens now. This is another person you sort of charted out in your book. And I think that she's kind of a perfect example of, like, I guess, the earlier instances of this sort of celebrity, like, influencer model. When I first came across Candace Owens, she was posting videos on YouTube and using her voice as a Black woman to try to represent, I guess, what she thought was support for Republicans from Black women, like what that sounded like, what that looked like. But the first video I saw, and probably one of the most viral ones she had in her upcoming thing, when she was calling herself Red Pill Black, was this very weird video in which she claims that white supremacy doesn't exist in America, that she put out in the wake of the Unite the Right rally in 2017. It was very bizarre. Then she went on InfoWars, even co-hosting in Austin, Texas, with Alex Jones a few times. And, you know, initially kind of built herself up as this, like, conspiracy theory influencer. Then came Turning Point USA, and she was, like, absorbed into the conservative establishment. You know, you said Charlie, you know, the organization's getting accusations of racism. He brings in Candace Owens. What happens next?
So Candace Owens is a person who doesn't, and like Charlie, does not believe that systemic racism is really a serious problem in this country, and that the folks that are experiencing the most alarming prejudice and racism is white men. So that's her position. And as you can imagine, it's a very popular position for elder white donors who see a young Black woman who is sharing this view online, and they can't give her enough money, right? Because she is a great spokesperson for them, and to some extent may alleviate their own concerns that there is racism in the Republican ranks. When I talk about her, I think that she genuinely believes the things she says. I also think she's an opportunist, and she was a person looking for fame, and she was looking for a route to get famous. And there was, if you read my book, there's lots of other ways that she tried originally to kind of get famous. And so she's kind of a perfect example of the type of person that can get attracted to this movement, because it can be a very easy way, if you're willing to talk the talk, to get traction and to get well known and to piggyback off a movement that already exists, and to get folks to give you money to put on your own shows, and to give you outlets that'll publish your articles and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, when I watch the Turning Point USA conferences, there's like pyrotechnics and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's like they like want it to be like a Lollapalooza or something for the right. And it's in the energy is crazy. And it's a little bit, I mean, I went to many of them, as you can imagine, and they just got more and more intense and more extravagant and more expensive and elaborate and more like a concert. they also got angrier and angrier and scarier. And then eventually you just had people on stage that were just screaming at the audience about the left and how horrible the left is. And a lot of it was, and it became like, you got the sense there was something very evangelical about it, that it felt a little bit like a crazy, chaotic church revival or something, you know, a kind of, so there's that element to it as well. But the other thing is that kids get to come to these conferences for many times, often for free. They get to stay in these swanky hotels and they get to get a lot of times free food. And it's a big party. These conferences for these kids is a big party. And some of them are true believers and some of them are just kind of sort of conservative and there to have a good time.
Yeah. And then, you know, also just looking at, you know, Young Americans for Liberty, the speakers they bring in, Ben Shapiro being a major one, they'll clip them and share them. And it's, you know, owning the libs. Because, you know, nothing impresses me more than a grown man out debating like an 18-year-old. Very difficult thing to do.
Well, that's a Steve Crowder thing, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that, like, if the left can figure out how to talk about these people, right, can really figure out how to message around these folks, the messaging should really be, what are these 30-something, late 20-year-old 30-somethings doing? These men, particularly a lot of them are men, going to college campuses and trying to engage young people in really alarming conversation, often with women, often about issues around gender and sex, like stuff that you don't think an adult male ought to, you know, for these folks that are constantly running around calling everyone a pervert, you got to ask yourself why it's okay for them to land on these college campuses and try to insult people and harass them into conversation.
And why are they getting showered in cash to do it?
Yeah. And why are these, right? Why are these establishment donors giving them money to do this? Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that, as you noted, the fact that these people have become so entrenched in the Republican establishment is really a sign of how sick and suffering and grotesque that movement has become, right? That this is normalized for them. And they've been told, or perhaps they've just convinced themselves, that this is normal and okay behavior. I mean, Ben Shapiro went to a college campus a couple years ago and gave everybody the finger.
Yeah, yeah. The whole messaging of the GOP seems to have been centered around not arguing for its policies, not being like, tax cuts are awesome, or,
right,
you know, we need to ban all abortion, because that shit is not popular. You pull it everywhere, it is just not majority popular. Like, all the messaging, it seems like, for the last, I mean, probably 5, even 10 years or more, I don't know, has been around how bad the left is. And that seems to be like the only conversation that is happening in these youth movements. Some Turning Point USA speeches or Young American for Liberty events that I've watched or attended have had a certain amount of being like, you know, we believe in this, we believe in that. And it's just, it's kind of vague, but you get sort of a, I think you put it well, like an evangelical vibe to it. But like, so much of it is just like, look how terrible this person is. Also, I'm the opposite of that person.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way that I've seen them is that they really try to avoid actual substantial conversations or conversations about real talking points and positions that Democrats versus Republicans hold. Like, in the last couple months, I've seen Charlie Kirk do more talk around, you know, go to schools and talk about reproductive rights and why women, you know, why they're not good, you know. And he does some of that, but they also try to stay pretty focused on just demonizing and kind of creating a sort of cliquey scenario in which they're these loser kids that we should, who are the left, and we all dislike them, and they're trying to take our stuff. And, you know, it sort of stays on that level. Which, it's worked, Jared. And I think the big question now is whether it's going to continue to work, because I think this midterm election was a sign that young people are paying attention, and they're actually paying attention to what the Democrats are doing and what the Democrats believe in and what the Republicans stand for. And they're not so fooled by some of this. So I think if the Democrats can message better and can get a handle on how to message around these really bad actors, they might actually be able to get into this conversation and start getting a handle on the narrative, because at this point, it looks like they've kind of lost it.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, you know, you're talking about what Democrats could do. Is there any equivalent to this on like the leftward side of the political aisle, I guess I would call it? You know, have Democratic donors, you know, sunk money into youth organizing and building, you know, these online celebrities and trying to run messaging like this? Is there anything comparable or equal? You're shaking your head.
Yeah, there really isn't. I mean, you have these, I don't know, you know, I've discovered just through my own kids, some of these individuals who seem to be messaging against Charlie Kirk and his buddies, like someone like Hassan Piker. I don't know if you're familiar with Hassan Piker, but he does his own thing, right? He's just like an individual out there who is, you know, he's the Twitch guy. Is that right? He's the Twitch guy?
Yeah. Yeah. He does like Twitch streaming, but yeah, I would never say that he's like in the pocket of the Democratic Party or anything.
No, that's my point.
He goes like hard on them too, you know?
He does his own thing. Yeah. But that's my point. Like when I think of anyone who's really going head to head with Charlie Kirk and with some of these bad actors, it's guys like that who are just like doing their own thing. They can be considered by the Democratic Party actually kind of radical. And so no, the Democrats have not really been able to find folks who can consistently message for them. And that's a problem, and they're going to have to figure that out. I think and similarly, there are some really great, there's so many great progressive groups now, particularly ones that are on the ground really doing the hard work of getting people out to vote. So there's groups like Lucha in Arizona. The Sunrise Movement is obviously the environmental group that sometimes gets some backlash for being maybe too radical at times, but they do great work. Next Gen is Tom Steyer's group, and they're amazing at getting out the vote. So there are these groups, they exist, they need more money, they need more attention, they need more love from Democratic donors who need to start to understand that they really are the future of the party, and they need to be helped to message out the good stuff the Democrats do.
I've been talking with Kyle Spencer, the author of Raising Them Right, The Untold Story of America's Ultra-Conservative Youth Movement. A link to that will be down in the description of this episode. So as we're wrapping up, this book came out it was October, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, October.
I know a very minimal amount about book publishing, so I imagine you had to turn it in quite sooner. I'm curious if, you know, since the time your book came out and now, or I guess I should say the time that you finalized the book before it went to the presses and now, if there's been anything happening in the conservative youth movement that has really caught your eye, you know, that you were like, ah, damn it, I wish that was in the book. Or like,
yeah, I mean, I would say more is what we just saw with the midterms. I think that what I'm seeing more is a lot is Democrats waking up and saying, we need to do something about these folks, and we need to figure out how to message better. And also, I'm seeing out in the field Democratic donors understanding this more and more. So I would say that's something that's I'm seeing. And what I really saw during the midterms was leading up, you saw Charlie Kirk and Tyler Bauer, who runs his organization, and some of these other actors getting so, so radical. And of course, they were in Arizona supporting Carrie Lake. And
yeah, they were like essentially running that campaign.
They were essentially running the campaign. And obviously the campaign was a horrible campaign. I mean, she was a dynamic character who got a lot of attention, but was really alarming and scary, and was basically threatening voters. When you vote for me, I'll destroy the press. When you vote for me, I'll change the electoral, the free and fair elections we have. She was threatening, and they really thought that was going to fly, and it didn't. And I think that they have basically gone too far. I think that's what I'm seeing. Honestly, having spent all this time with them and seeing what they've done, I hope that's what we're seeing. And I think they're very out of touch. And I think they kind of were onto something for a while, and then they've just taken it too far. A little bit like what Trump, has also done. And so that's where I think the story continues. And what we're going to have to see now is, can the Democrats respond to that? And will those guys dial it back a bit and go back to a place where they're trying to sort of show their radicalism as less malignant? But I don't think so. I think they're way down too deep.
So as we wrap up here, first, Kyle, I want to thank you again for giving some of your time to me and to the listeners here. Every guest on the show gets the same last question. So here it is for you. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
So I have to speak off topic. I'm watching a show called Echo 3, which is on Apple. And it's this kind of great story about this woman who gets abducted in Latin America, and her brother and her husband go looking for her. And I'm just really enjoying it. So that's my yeah.
My favorite online thing is also a TV show. Cleo on Netflix.
What's it called? Like,
it's called Cleo. K-L-E-O. Okay. It's this German sort of suspense drama thing about a Stasi assassin who like gets thrown in jail and gets out and tries to figure out like what exactly went down, you know, in a world where the GDR is falling. And it's super gripping. You got to work through the first episode or two, but then after that, it really starts to pick up.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch it.
Kyle, thanks so much.
Thank you. Another cog in the murder machine. They say.